If the very tools that I'm relying on to respond have been compromised and therefore I can't trust them, where does my plan go from there?
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the HIP Podcast. My name is Sean Duby, Principal Technologist Americas for Semperis, and I'm happy to have you here today. When I asked my colleague and incident response veteran, Marty Momjian, what are his single image memories of his times in incident response, he replied, sweat and old fast food. One of the unfortunate realities of the IT and business world today is participating in incident response. Most employees certainly didn't join a company to be involved in such a stressful situation, but it's a burden all have had to accept, as it seems inevitable that every organization is going to be attacked. Given that inevitability, it's reasonable you'd want to be prepared, not just from the technology and process viewpoints, but from the people viewpoint as well. What should I brace myself for that I haven't thought about? My guest today is Jonathan Mayer, known to his teammates as Ransom Mayer, Principal Security Consultant for the Americas at Cohesity, where he's helped many Fortune 500 and Global 1000 organizations strengthen cyber resilience through threat intelligence, incident response, and recovery strategy. A founding member of Cohesity's Security Center of Excellence and the Cyber Event Response Team, CERT, his current focus is proactively collaborating with security partners and customers to strengthen security posture and readiness by drawing from the many experiences and lessons learned through his time with CERT. With more than 20 years in security operations, forensics, and business continuity, Jonathan's held leadership roles at EMC, Dell, and Verizon, where he oversaw global NOC operations and major incident mitigation. And as he says, the guy you don't ever want to talk to on nights and weekends. Jonathan is also speaking at HIP in Charleston, North Carolina, about cyber resilience strategies. But because Jonathan is also Cohesity's principal security consultant on the proactive side, today we're going to talk about some of the less discussed aspects of such a strategy, especially interesting for listeners that have not been in a cyber crisis situation and probably devoutly wish to remain that way. Welcome, Jonathan.
Thanks. No, that's quite the introduction. Really happy to be here. Long-time listener, first-time caller. So,
yeah, Jonathan and I have had some fun conversations, and I look forward to more in Charleston, perhaps, and more interesting surroundings than these backdrops. So, when we were talking about having a conversation here today, obviously the buzzword of the month or the week or the quarter is resilience, talking about resilience. And a lot of resilience, so much of resilience is what you do beforehand. So let's sort of start with talking about the things to be doing before you're in the trenches dealing with those 2 a.m. phone calls and visits from Jonathan Mayer and that sort of thing. Is it determining what's important to the mission of the organization? Or you had talked about determining mission critical in a way that maybe IT managers hadn't really thought about before.
Yeah, it's the preparation aspects. I mean, there are a lot of threads, and that's where, instead of an organized tapestry, things tend to be just a tangled mess. Because yeah, as organizations start to look at it, there's not really good alignment, right? You get different stakeholders, different business units taking a different angle on, you know, oh, well, you know, for us to be resilient, we need these things. And for us to be resilient, we need these things. And we talked about a little bit, you know, in past conversations, but fundamentally, alignment to the mission of the organization is so critical. You know, if you're a manufacturer that makes, you know, whatever it is, table saws, then everybody in that company, everybody in that organization like the mission is to produce more table saws in a reliable time frame, you know, without disruption. And it you've got to break away from the, well, I'm a network guy, so my job, you know, my mission is to secure the network, right? You've got to put it in the right context, because that allows for the alignment organization-wide to then start figuring out how you can help each other be mutually successful.
So to expand on your network, obviously, and I joke about this, you know, as an identity person, identity is, you know, identity is the most important thing. I mean, it turns out that it actually probably is, but but I mean, you know, if you're a network person, the network is the most important thing. And to everybody, it's the most important thing. But the challenge is to look at it from a business viewpoint and determine what is really the most important thing to keep widgets going, or whatever it is that sustains the purpose of the organization. It's confusing sometimes because we talk about mission critical. Oh, this is mission critical. And you make a point of distinguishing the difference between mission critical for operations versus mission critical for response capability. Can you expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And that really comes back to, and I kind of agree with you on the authentication piece, is really one of the fundamental capabilities, because the you know, quick poll out there, you know, what's the thing that's most important that's lost first and hardest to regain is trust. So it doesn't, everything else is, you know, secondary to, I've got to reestablish trust. And that's exactly why there's that distinction between what's actually mission critical, because if the very tools that I'm relying on to respond have been compromised and therefore I can't trust them, you know, where does my plan go from there, right? That may be the first part. And I mean, every conversation I have with customers and prospects, you know, whether it's proactive or as an after action kind of conversation, it ultimately comes down to, yes, we need to be able to make the widgets, but I need to be able to have visibility into my logging. There's so much reliance on endpoint detection. It's great. It's useful. It's important. You know, in some threat scenarios, that's really your best bet at having visibility as to what's going on. But that's also one of the primary targets of attackers to undermine, right? I mean, anybody familiar with the Brickstorm scenario that's unfolded this week? That is a very skilled state-sponsored threat group, and they are very good at evading detection and then using endpoint, you know, tools against their victims. And so having that resilience built into, and having a flexible enough plan that really provides for a way to rebuild that, you know, those response capabilities, those critical capabilities from trusted media, from trusted sources, out of band assets. That's really a key aspect to any useful response plan. Anybody else, you're just, I've seen it happen all too many times where they've got a great plan, but they didn't quite go that last little step. And then, you know, next thing you know, you've got this real scenario, got a laptop connected to a switch that was brand new with a bare bones config on it. And the laptop's in a data center, because we know how good cell reception is in a data center. And they're using a cell phone, like my, you know, Wi-Fi connection to download like a Windows ISO so they can rebuild their Active Directory. I mean, if that doesn't make you cry just hearing it, I don't know what will.
Coming back to trust and believability. So this is, to go back to the mission critical aspect of it, you're talking about the mission criticality of the ability to respond, which is entirely separate from the mission criticality of the ability to keep the I'm not entirely separate, but largely separate from the ability to keep the business running, because you assume that in a cyber attack, the business has been crippled. But in many organizations, and maybe even most organizations, a lot of the cyber response capability and infrastructure depends on aspects of the same business that has been attacked.
100%. I mean, and that's why Active Directory becomes such a hot topic, right? Because, I mean, even in our own customer base, we routinely get called in and, you know, you step in, you say, okay, what's the scenario? Where are we? What do we know? And they say, okay, well, a threat came in, we started getting alerts, and it's been identified that Active Directory at least is partially compromised. Okay, tell me more about that. Oh, here's this service account. Okay, well, what systems does it have access to? Well, we don't really know because we can't, you know, the network is down. We've gone into isolation. They insert reasoning here, but you don't have good visibility. And then all of a sudden you say, okay, well, let's check our logs and see, make sure, you know, from Cohesity's perspective, our primary focus is making sure that the backup environment, you know, that A, the integrity is there and that we maintain its integrity through the course of the response. And so, you know, on occasion we'll say, okay, you know, you've got an admin here that's allocated through Active Directory, a lot of logins, a lot of weird activity here, right? And fortunately we've got a lot of controls built into the system that prevent those logins from, you know, doing anything, but it gives us a very clear picture of like, yeah, you've had somebody you don't want on this console. They just weren't able to take the actions that they wanted to, so they pivoted and they've gone off somewhere else. So now it turns into a little bit of a hide and seek game, where it's, you know, my kids play this game called Flashlight Tag, so they turn off all the lights and run around and like try to find each other.
Okay.
So it's a lot like that. You know, they stepped into the light for a minute, didn't get anywhere, and now they disappeared into the dark and we get to go find them, right?
Right. Well, so in planning, and we're still in the before in this part of this, you also talked about don't go too deeply into what ifs. You could go down a rabbit hole with what ifs. So expand on what you mean by that.
Yeah, it's a balance, right? I've pretty routinely had conversations where, you know, somebody says, oh, well, here's our concern. And so we talk through it and we say, okay, well, here's a good mitigation, or here's a good preparation to sort of minimize the risk from that concern. Okay, well, what if this? And are you say, you know, a lot of times it comes with, can your platform do X, or do you have X? And we say, yes. And then they say, well, what if an attacker does this and this and this and this? And what if, you know, there's an EMP and my whole data center is down? It's like, all right, let's, you know, time out here for a second. You know, if that's the scenario that we're dealing with, let's just kind of zoom out for a second and think about what would cause that. Oh, it's a giant meteor that took out an entire state or a quadrant of the United States. Like, if that's, you know, if that's the situation, then there's probably a societal shift in priorities, that maybe your widget doesn't matter as much in that moment. It's not that it's not critical, and there are certain, I mean, that's critical infrastructure, and there are aspects where, yeah, like, we need to be thinking about this. But, you know, that's where you've got to have a little bit of humility. And just real, I mean, kind of back to your Sun Tzu thing, right? It's, you know, be honest with yourself about how important are you in the big picture. And as that picture expands out and out and out, you know, like, I might make the best, you know, cutting boards in the state, but if the nation's power grid is down, nobody's looking for a cutting board in that moment. So I just got to be realistic that, you know, at that point, I'm just going to take care of my family and we're going to forget about cutting boards for a while, right?
Jonathan's he's very modest. He turns out to be a very quotable individual. He's always dropping a bon mot here or there. And in our conversation about this, he said, paranoia has a budget, which I think is a wonderful statement, because when you're in these exercises, people start throwing in what ifs in every direction. And that's how it should be. You should throw out everything you can think about, but then you end up having to do a risk analysis or a triage of them, and which of them fall into the meteor class and which of them fall into the probably going to happen next week class, and prioritize what it is that you need, or what are the most likely scenarios that you need to pay attention to. And actually, that goes into another thing that we were talking about, being honest with yourself.
Yeah, all too often, you know, we want to think that we can handle everything, we can go it alone. You need to have a good partner ecosystem. You need to have good contingencies. It's okay to be honest that your plan has gaps and holes. And frankly, when you test, whether it's through tabletops or just kind of thinking through things, doing your own analysis, if the objective isn't to find gaps and holes and problems and essentially push until, you know, the failure, then you're probably not doing it right. Because I coach baseball, right? In Little League. And we've had zero practices that went better than a game, right? I mean, sometimes you have a great practice and that's fine, but it really doesn't matter. And if everybody's just dialed in and it's, they're just sort of like, oh yeah, I can do this, I'm going to move on to the next thing. Yeah, I want them to challenge themselves. If they want to try the trick play that looks awesome on a, you know, highlight reel, great. Do that in practice and figure out that, oh wow, I need to do more squats, or I need to get better with my fundamentals over here to make that possible when it's game time, right? And so that's really the thing when you're being honest with yourself is just knowing that it's okay that you don't have all the answers, because guess what? The attackers are always going to get first mover advantage. So you're always at a disadvantage.
Always on your heels.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And yeah, what you hope they do is going to be exactly play into everything you know. But like we talked about, if they've been in your environment for 400 days, they know everything that you're going to do. And you know, this goes back to the human element of things. I always joke this. Here's a little nugget for the nerds out there, fellow nerds. I always joke ransomware is Soylent Green, right? So if you don't know what that one is, yeah, that's going to be a fun little YouTube search for you. But the whole, I'll ruin it. Spoiler alert, it's people, right? And so that all too often I encounter situations where like fundamental people, the organizations and response teams, and yeah, they understand that yes, there are attackers and they are humans out there doing it, but they're not thinking of it in terms of, I have a live essentially sysadmin in my environment watching my moves and specifically taking action to minimize the effectiveness of whatever it is I'm doing. Like it's, you know, it's like if I'm trying to make a nice piece of furniture in here and then I've got somebody hiding under the table, like pushing on the boards as I shoot them through the table saw to, you know, mess up my cuts and burn things. And, you know, it's, You've got to have that awareness of what's going on in the environment in order to really, I mean, and that's why when we see organizations that jump into the recovery aspect of things and don't perform a proper response, they just, all they do is you signed up to repeat the process again. You get your free practice on the spot in the heat of the battle, because the attacker is still in the room, and they're going to keep punishing you until you get it right and get them out.
I really like the way you put it, which is to understand it's not just Simon Legree twirling his mustache. You have a sysadmin on the other side with attack skills that does attacks every day. And so being honest with yourself that your plan has weaknesses, as it will, as it must, is really key to helping to understand how to adapt, and which leads us into, as we're talking in this during aspect of it, what are some of the key things that you have from your experience, from sort of the people aspect? A lot of, there's always stuff on tech, on technology and techniques and all of that. But from the people viewpoint, as you say, being honest with yourself, another thing that you had talked about was, and there you have many different aspects of it, but one that also came up was flexibility. So I'm putting yourself in the shoes of our, what do you say here? We say listeners or viewers, depending on what they're doing,
right?
That may or may not have been through one of these. What are the things that you wanted to share with them for them to think about that isn't just purely about technology?
It kind of goes back to the human aspect, the human element. And I think Marty touched on a little bit in your quote conversation with him, just the duration is, I all too often there's an expectation that things are going to happen, they try to measure it in hours, maybe even a day. Usually they're measured in days, weeks, sometimes even months, depending on the level of impact and just all of the different aspects of the what's going on. And to that end, even just the initial response, I mean, these threats, they don't tend to operate on our business schedule for a variety of reasons, but just the like sleep, food, water, temperature, some basic stuff. Like, we talk about jump bags and go bags and that kind of thing. When people talk about it, I've got a digital forensic background, right? So there's bright blockers and, there's like the kit to do the job, but then there's a water bottle, there's a hoodie, there's maybe a neck pillow so that whatever weird corner of the data center I try to get a few hours of sleep in, I can actually earplugs, right? Because servers are loud. I've gotten, my kids think it's incredible that I can tell them that I've actually slept in between two server racks because there was just enough space where I could kind of, it was a hot, cold setup and it was, so it was kind of warm out.
Right. On the output side. Right.
Right. And so I could wedge myself and kind of let my knees lock against the cabinet, and I could just sleep there for at least 10 minutes and get a little bit of rest while I was letting some analysis run. So it's some of that kind of stuff that experienced shops and groups that have been through things, they'll that stuff's like, oh yeah, no, totally. But if you haven't been through it, I mean, we've had to completely just pause activities for 10 hours because, the resource we were working with, they'd been up for 2 days straight and they were so fatigued that it was just, there was too much risk of them making a mistake and kind of working backwards. So we just said, look, we can just take a pause, go get some rest, and then we'll pick this back up whenever you're able to see straight again.
Well, there's a couple aspects of that. One is, the need for having more than one subject matter expert on something.
Yep.
that's a human definition of single point of failure. another thing that you talked about was flexibility in a flexibility. And I don't mean the flexibility to squeeze into between two server racks. I mean, flexibility of mindset is what we were talking about. Can you expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, it's important. And this kind of goes back to that whole understanding the mission of the organization, because all too often, you know, you have this plan and like, oh, we've got a DR site and so we're going to shift things over, or we paid for whatever technology and like, that's got to be part of the plan because we got to prove that that was worth the purchase price. But from a mindset, whenever things start happening, you know, you're constantly doing a risk analysis. And so as new information comes into the mix, you're looking at that and saying, okay, well, the path that I was on was optimal for that moment, but this new information, yeah, that's no longer the case. And so whether it's shifting things into the cloud, coming out of the cloud, standing up new infrastructure altogether, it plays out a lot of different ways. And then the more you go through these scenarios, whether it's a live thing and you know, it's part of the after action report and it's the lessons learned, which, by the way, it's super important to execute on those as quickly as possible, because the chance for repeat is just astronomical. But it's even more important to kind of go through that stuff proactively, because then you can start figuring out where maybe setting up an additional partnership or, having sort of a secondary capability queued up can make all the difference, because it gives you that peace of mind to know that if a situation gets to a certain point, I've got my ace in the hole over here.
Right. You're not hanging everything on one strategy. You have a backup for each. Maybe not as optimal as you would like. That's why it's a backup. But yeah. But you still have a backup for it. So let's move to after. What are some takeaways that you would like to share with folks about after it? You just touched on one, which was remediate as quickly as possible, such things. But what are your thoughts on the matter?
Yeah, I mean, we definitely see it on occasion where you get through it and you just want it behind you, right? You just want to move on and get as far away from it as possible. Soak in the pain a little bit, because it really does a lot for the team. I mean, it's kind of a unifying thing in a weird way, but it also allows you, be objective and be honest. Back to that honesty thing. Like, if something really didn't work out, learn from it. And one of the other things that we see all too often is that there's this sort of blame on technology. It's like, oh, well, the technology failed, so we're just going to get rid of all the old stuff. That's no good. And we're going to bring in all the new stuff. And maybe that works out. I mean, if there are definitive things that failed in the technology and they're not correctable, fine. That may make sense. But kind of going back to that bigger risk, conversation, is it more risk to introduce a very disruptive, refresh and retraining of your people and retooling of your processes, all at a period where you're pretty susceptible to a re-attack? Or is it worth really taking a close look at what you've got going on and just, when we talk about maturity, it's people, process, technology, right? Like, I always talk about, I got this, this is a really nice table saw back here. It's my dad's fault. He talked me into it, right? But I can make the finest sawdust possible with that table saw or with the handsaw that's all rusty hanging over there in the corner. Like, same outcome, but it's the process I use And it's, you know, the people I'm learning from in order to get the better result, right? And so it's no different with your technology stack. And that's a huge part of, like, when we engage with our customers, really at the beginning of the engagement, we go through and make sure that at least, you know, recommended things are done, you know, validate, were they already in place? What makes sense? We put it in place. And then immediately before we will actually disengage, we will go through with a fine-tooth comb and make sure that we leave that environment better than it was when we stepped in, right? Because, you know, we don't have control over everything. And that's where, like, if you've got a good team of response groups put together, if everybody does kind of that aspect of things, you end up walking out of the situation before you even close the incident. You're already in a much, much better place. And then, of course, sometimes there's additional, maybe there's a policy change, or, you know, maybe there are other things that can happen, but you already put yourself so far ahead of the game.
What's nice about what you were just talking about is that it comes full circle. It comes full circle in post incident to being honest with yourself. And the team being honest with itself, what worked, what didn't work. Although the trick is to be able to do that without pointing blame, because certainly there's this is an area where the blame game is in full effect.
Oh yeah,
which is one of the reasons CISOs have such short tenures at organizations. But I think that's great, because it's some of these principles they apply across the whole range of an incident. So, Jonathan, we've got to go, but I really appreciate the time. I look forward to seeing you at HIP.
Yeah.
And hearing what you have to say in terms of other cybersecurity strategies. And who knows, maybe some of this will come out in the talk as well. It's sort of churning in the back of your mind. We'll get another little quotable quote. Pops out. I like that one about the table saw and the sawdust too. That's a good one. So
yeah, just by the way, like, to anybody out there, yes, this is a real background, and no, I don't get to use it nearly enough.
That's right. And if you look very, very carefully, you'll see a Han Solo blaster in the corner there too. So excellent. Thanks again, Jonathan. A great time. And I look forward to seeing you in person.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it. Thanks for having me.
Everybody, thanks for joining the HIP podcast and sponsored by Sempris. Thanks again.